Hey, Project Nerd listeners, Iggy here, bringing you a very special episode of the Nerdcast. I'm joined today by my special helper, Evie Rose.
Hello.
Evie, you know what's special about this week's episode of the Nerdcast?
No.
Well, one, Tyler's not on it, so that's great. But yeah. Two, actually, it's our panel recording of when we talked to John DiMaggio and Kevin Conroy. You know who John DiMaggio is?
I know who Kevin Conroy is, but not...
John DiMaggio is the voice of Jake in Adventure Time.
What?
Yep. And Kevin Conroy, obviously, the voice of Batman in many, many of the animated series. So check it out. Just a short panel from Colorado Springs Comic Con. And we'll be back for our regular episodes next week. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
We're just like Kevin Bacon.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You just mind your P's and Q's, Buster, and remember who you're dealing with.
Only on Project Nerd.
99999!
Awesome. Well, welcome, everybody. I'm Iggy from Project Nerd, and I know you guys are excited to see me on stage. Normally, I'm going to warm you guys up, but I have a feeling for this one. This is everybody's ready for what's about to happen, so I'm just going to go ahead and bring them out. But please welcome our very special guests, Kevin Conroy and John DiMaggio.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman!
Yeah! Fantastic. So we're going to get some dedicated Batman time.
You're going to start with me because John is held up at his table. So he'll be here in a minute. He'll make a very dramatic entrance.
Be excited for it.
And loud, I'm sure.
Awesome. So as all of you know, as Elijah kind of pointed out too, this is just a Q&A, and there's tons of you. So I'm going to let you guys just go straight to the questions. Normally, I warm up with a few questions, but I'm already seeing hands go up. So we're just going to go straight here. So we have, as he pointed out, there's the microphone going around. So just make sure that they notice you. So we got one up front here. Let's just get started with, let's get started with crowd questions. I won't even warm it up here.
Here I go.
There we go. He's excited.
Superman is ready.
What's your mother's name?
Kidding. I'm kidding.
Is this like a prank show?
I'm kidding. My actual question is, did you prefer working on Batman the Animated Series or Justice League?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Batman the Animated Series has a special place in my heart because it's where we originated all the characters. When you start a new show, you know, in 91 when we started recording the show, we were only working from sketches. No one had actually seen anything yet. All we had were outlines of what the characters were going to look like. So the first 6 months, you know, in animation, the actors go first. We record first and record like a radio play. And then the recordings are sent off to artists and the artists paint the show. And then it comes back for a process called ADR, where you sync up the visual with the vocal. And so for those first 6 months that the first episodes were being painted, no one had seen anything. We were recording shows like radio plays just using our imaginations. And then when they first came back and I saw the rich color and the full symphony sound and the dramatic effects, I thought, good God, I can't believe I've been a part of this thing. So those early years involved a lot of actor imagination and a lot of actor interaction, like Mark Hamill and I in the booth together, just going crazy, you know? And that cast, you know, Ron Perlman, Mark Hamill, John Glover, Adrian Barbeau. I mean, it was just such a great cast. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. So there's a special place in my heart for it because it was a time when we established all those characters and we're discovering that world together. And also, selfishly, I had a lot to do. You know, it was Batman. So I had a lot in every episode. When you're doing an ensemble show like Justice League, there are seven principal characters. And especially when you're the outsider, which Batman is, you're kind of always on the periphery of the action, commenting on it almost in a way. And they worked that into the stories. So he in Justice League, he was a very important character. He was kind of the soul. He was the conscience of the Justice League. But in terms of actual action, I didn't have as much to do, you know? So the animated series, I'd say, was really my favorite. So that's my job.
As we're lining up another question, I just wanted to ask, you pointed out those first 6 months it was doing like a radio show. Did that connect you at all to like the history of the character? Because in the 40s, I mean, they did that for Batman.
Well, that's what's interesting about my experience with getting this job, and I don't know if you realize this. This was my first animated job. I was a theater actor. I was from New York. I did Broadway and off-Broadway. I did a lot of Shakespeare. I trained at Juilliard. I was a classic theater background. So when I went in on this and I met Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski and Andrea Romano, they said, "What's your experience with Batman?" I said, "Well, I know the Adam West show from the 60s. And he went, "No, no, no. We love Adam West, but that's not what we're doing." He said, "Don't you know about The Dark Knight?" And I said, "No." He said, "Didn't you read comic books as a kid?" And I said, "No." He said, "What kind of childhood did you have?" So he said, you know, he had to educate me. I had to be brought totally up to speed on, you know, the death of his parents, the film noir, New York, dark, gritty, avenging their deaths, living in the shadows, misunderstood, dual identity. I said, "You're telling the Hamlet story. This is a Shakespearean tragedy." And he said, "Well, it's interesting. No one's put it in that perspective before." So I, as a theater actor and as a classically trained theater actor, was just bringing what I knew to it. But when you think about it, what better role to start with in animation than Batman? He is a classical. He's a classic hero. He is the dark, tragic. He is Achilles. He's Orestes. He's Hamlet. You know, he's all those characters rolled into one. He's just our generation's version of those stories. So approaching it from the perspective that I came from was kind of perfect. It was weird that I happened to be in that audition, but it was kind of a perfect hand in glove situation, you know? So to answer your question, I had to learn about the whole legacy after I got the job. And Mark Hamill was a great teacher. Here he is. I thought you'd make a much louder entrance.
Wait and take it easy and let you finish your story.
Okay, great.
Everybody, John DiMaggio.
But now that I'm here.
The great John DiMaggio.
How's everybody doing?
I don't even belong on the stage anymore, but I think we've got questions. It's already going. Questions. They're ready.
Okay, cool. Questions. So, let them rip. Okay.
Right over here, who had the question?
You want to stand up?
I have a question for Kevin.
Uh-huh.
How did you develop the voice for Batman? Did you like have several you tried out, or?
Well, that's that situation I was describing earlier. I was just telling them it was the first animated audition I ever had. I wasn't a voiceover guy.
Yeah.
And so I was in the booth and I'd met all these incredible people. I didn't know who they were. I didn't know who Bruce Timm was or Andre Romano. And I was just a theater actor. And they described the character to me. So it was one of those really unusual situations in LA, which really doesn't happen very often, where you're just an unknown commodity in an audition and you get to use your imagination. And as they described the character to me, I just went to a place that seemed like the world that voice would come from. And then as I was doing it, I saw Andrea and Bruce running around in the booth and I thought, well, either I suck or I just got the job.
That's the worst feeling in the world when they go, "Hold on 1 second."
Yeah, they start going.
Okay, we're gonna. That will throw you off.
You don't know what they're saying about you.
Yeah, that's right.
They're either saying he's awful, or they're saying everyone else was awful.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
You know. But so that's how I came up with it. It was literally just an improvised audition, and that's kind of fluky.
All right, another question over here.
My question is also for Kevin.
Yep.
You've been Batman for longer than I've been alive.
Brag.
In my mind, you
nice job, dude. Yeah, way to go.
Just no, it's just, all right. Just as a matter of fact, it's longer than I've been alive, too. Okay.
But I wanted to know, like, you are Batman in my eyes.
There you go.
How long are you going to continue to be Batman?
Or is there an God, ending? As long as they hire me.
Yeah.
When I don't get it, people always say, oh, did you retire? I'm like, no, I didn't retire. They just decided to try somebody new. They occasionally decide to try somebody new. And what's weird is when they try someone new, they usually say, now make it sound like this guy, you know? And I'm like, well, this guy's right here, you know? I'm available. Yeah. But they just want to shake things up. They like to shake things up and try different people.
Which is how I got the Joker, so, you know.
And you're a great Joker.
Thank you. No, but yeah, they mix it up.
They mix it up.
Thanks. They tend to mix it up.
And I thought it was crazy when they first started doing the live-action Batman that they didn't give the franchise to one person. Traditionally, you give the franchise to one person, yeah. And they build it around it. And then when I saw that Michael Keaton was going to Christian Bale, was going to, you know, actor after actor, I thought, this is crazy. But then when I saw all the different versions that they did, I thought, this is kind of brilliant, you know? There are so many different ways of interpreting the character.
The point that you were making before about Batman being Shakespearean, I feel the same way about the Joker. He's
yeah.
one of those, you know, these characters are just written, and you get a chance to play them like someone gets a chance to play Macbeth or King Lear, you know? And everybody's interpretation is different.
Yep.
What the set looks like, what the director's going for, there's so many different things that apply in that situation, which affects the casting. And it's, I don't know. It always amazes me when they switch it up and then you go, I don't know about that. And then you go, oh, I get it now. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I get
it. You see it from a different
perspective. Yeah, yeah.
Like Heath Ledger's Joker.
Who saw that coming?
Mark Hamill to me was the Joker. He is the Joker.
Yeah.
But then Heath Ledger, and I thought, what? That's a whole different kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm just glad that Mark Hamill likes my Joker. That's all. Because his fans are brutal. They're like, this guy stinks. Mark Hamill is... I'm like, Mark Hamill said he liked it, so maybe if you give it a chance, I don't know. It's rough, man. Rough.
Now, while we're lining up other questions, John, I have a quick one for you. We had Matthew Wood up on stage yesterday, the voice of General Grievous.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Is there any truth to the rumor
that
you were possibly going to be the voice of General Grievous?
No, I was the voice of General Grievous. And then I did the voice, and someone, I think it was him, was like, I can do an impersonation of that voice. And they went, oh, well, screw it. We'll just use you. So I kind of got... So when people come up to me and they're like, I have a General Grievous for you, I'm like... General Grievous. John DeMar... Here you go. Thanks.
We're asking the tough questions.
Oh, you want a Bender sign? Come on over here. It's cool. No, it's I got canned and replaced, which happens all the time, by the way. Which also is how I got the Joker, because I had someone else in there that wasn't cutting the mustard, and Andrea Romano, voice director extraordinaire, was just like, you know, they were like, we got to do something, and she was like, I got it. Beep boop 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 beep boop beep. John, get over here.
Yeah. Well, Mark replaced Tim Curry. In the original the original episodes, it was Tim Curry.
Wow.
Tim Curry was great.
Yeah.
He was just crazy, lock up the kids crazy. Like, don't let any children watch this show crazy. It was really scary. And when they told me Mark was going to replace him, I thought, replace him? He's great. Then Mark came in, and suddenly it was crazy, fun crazy. Yeah, and I thought... Oh, this is a whole different world.
Was Tim wearing the fishnet stockings while
he was
recording?
It was like it was really scary.
You gotta tone it down a little bit, Tim.
Tim, tone it down.
Yeah.
Here we go. All right. Questions back here.
Hi guys. My question is actually for John.
I love the movie Under the Red Hood, and I love your interpretation of Joker.
Hey, thanks, man. Yeah. We were just talking about that.
Yeah, I know. Well, my question is, and you did kind of touch up on it a little bit, how much pressure did you get from fan base? Because I know fans, especially hardcore fans, are unforgivingly brutal.
No, they were brutal. Yeah. But they were all Mark Hamill, die hard, don't take Mark Hamill away from me or else I'll kill you fans. Everybody else was just like, you know, everybody else has been really kind. The thing is that nobody knew I had it in me. They just thought I was a clown doing the bender and da, 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 da. And then I, you know, I did that and people were like, who is that guy? No. So it was a chance to kind of, you know, to spread my wings a little bit, go in a different direction, play a completely demonic Joker. One I kind of, you know, to put it bluntly, would have fun with you in prison. That kind of Joker. You know, just a brutal, brutal, you know, character. But they were rough. But the best part about it was when Mark was just like, John, I'm telling you, I love your Joker. It's fantastic. It's great. I was like, yes! Not the approval of the master. Thank you. I didn't want to do anything, like, my favorite Joker was Cesar Romero. So, right, right. So like, I put just a little bit of Cesar Romero and a whole lot of prison into that Joker, you know, just because it was, and I didn't want to worry about what everybody else was doing. I wanted to just serve the story and also get the job done because there was a bunch of people that were waiting to finish a project because another actor couldn't pull it off. So I was under the gun, but I had great tutelage with Andrea in the booth, and we just went from there. So thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, they are brutal, man. Oof. Rough.
Question on the left?
Over here.
No? Over here. Okay.
Hi. I'm a huge fan of both of you, and I think both of you are really awesome.
Thanks.
Kevin as Batman in the Arkham games, and then John as Bender and Khin Zog in Disenchantment.
Ah, yes. But, you guys watching Disenchantment yet?
Yeah.
What the? But
anyway, though, so my
question... Were you trying to make a jerk out of me?
Anyway, though, so my question was, if you were really a kin, would you put a tax on yelling like you did in episode 5?
Would I put a tax on yelling?
That backfired,
that's
by
the
way.
That's the best first Disenchantment question I've ever had. You literally are the first person to ask me about Disenchantment. So, yeah, I think I would have to put a tax on yelling anyway. It wouldn't matter. I'd go broke, but it
you'd
doesn't.
Go broke.
I'd
if
go
there was
totally
a tax
broke
on yelling.
Yeah, if I lived in Dreamland, I would have to pay the tax every day. But King Zog, I don't know. That's really a funny question. That's a catch-22, boy. I tell you.
Also, is there anything you can tell us about season 2 or part 2 of Disenchantment?
I'm not telling you anything. What do you think I am? Some kind of snitch? Come on, dude. Now you gotta wait. I can't wait. I watched all 10 too. I'm like, this looks great. I don't get to watch all of it, you know. But yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's the next 10 episodes are gonna be great, and they're just about done. We only have a little bit of. We only have a little bit of post-production to do on them, so we'll see. And hopefully Netflix will want to continue to tell the story, you know? So that's nice. But keep on streaming. Thank you, everybody. That's cool.
Great.
Thank you.
All right, other questions? We'll go back, a couple back here.
Thanks. Hi. So this is a question for Mr. DiMaggio.
Yes, sir.
So, because we both know Kevin is Batman.
Yes.
But for yourself, who out of all of your characters
Bender.
Would you say... Bender.
Awesome. Bender. Yeah.
Both of your guys' characters have raised me, and now we're raising my kids. So I get a lot of calls from the teachers and stuff. So it's.
Yeah, I bet you do. I bet you do.
Yeah, that's great. So
good job, buddy. Right. Way to go. First grader, like, bite my shiny metal ass.
Yeah, we had that like as he was a 4-year-old. So.
Really, he did that as a 4-year-old?
Yeah, it was great. Wow. So now, like,
it saddens me. I come from a family of teachers, man. Yeah, that's rough.
Both of my kids have like powered through Disenchantment and Batman the Animated Series. Like they both. My oldest is 8, and he's played all the Batman games, so that's great. So thank you, both of you, for being here. It's great. So.
Sure.
Cheers. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We had one in the back there. Or do we, over here? Okay.
This question's for John. We are really big Adventure Time fans. These kids pretty much grew up on Adventure Time.
Totally math, dude.
So two questions. How fun was it working on a show that was that weird and that out there? And second question is, could you sing the Bacon Pancake song?
Oh. All right, I'll sing the Bacon Pancake song first, and then we'll get to the question second. So, has everybody got their phones out? Everybody ready? Because that's what happens. He's going to sing the Bacon Pancake song. Turn on your phones! All right, ready? Bacon pancakes, making bacon pancakes. I take some bacon and I put it in a pancake. Bacon pancakes, that's what it's gonna make. Bacon pancakes. That last note's a mother, I'll tell you that much. It's early. Now, the first question you asked was it fun to work on a show that was that weird and that out there? In the beginning, no. And I'll tell you why. Because as an actor, you want something that's the map kind of laid out for you. So that you understand what's going on and how you see the whole picture in front of you. The way they... usually when you get a script, it's got stage direction in it, explains what's happening within the storyboard, it explains what's happening in the scene, it explains the mood, and there's other stage direction where, there's emotion, or something tied to the particular line that you're reading. This was not the case with the show in the beginning. We would get stacks of storyboards.
This, sent to us, via, Messenger, and then we'd have a script with just numbers on it, numbered lines. So we would have to match the line with the script, and it's like, no, please just tell me what's going on, and I'll do it. This is too much. You're killing trees. You're killing trees to supply me with information that is unneeded. I don't know if you noticed, but, Adventure Time, the land of Ooh, is nuts. And, you're just like, your top's Bluebee? What the hell does your top's Bluebee mean? I write that on people. I'm like, your top's Bluebee. I don't know what the hell that is. But, it's frustrating to be in that world and try and figure it out. But I had great advice from two people. Tom Kenny, who plays the Ice King, who's also SpongeBob SquarePants. Name dropping, watch your feet. But he said, it's this generation's Yellow Submarine. And I was like, wow, okay, I get that. And I was frustrated. I would be upset at certain recordings, being like, I don't know what's going on. And Dee Bradley Baker gave me the best advice, which was, John, listen, what you need to do, and he was really sincere about it. He was like, what you need to do is you need to go home and you need to cry in your bag of money. And I went, you're absolutely right. I could be tarring a roof right now. Just let it ride. And honestly, the rest of the show, the more we had people in the booth, that there were people, people that were explaining things that were happening better, it went better. And the more I did that, the more I paid more attention to Jake and the less attention to the land of Ooh, the better it got for me. And now, I cried at the end of my last session. you're going to cry too. This September 3rd, last Adventure Time episode, the last song, it's murder. It's just, I'm not crying, you're crying. It's that rough. So, yeah, it turned out to be a really special thing because I didn't really realize how much I was a part of Jake and Jake was a part of me until the very end, until it was over. It's rough. But, yeah, I hope that answers your question. Okay, cool.
All right, question here on the right.
First of all, I want to thank John for mentioning D. Bradley Baker because I think he's one of the most underrated talents.
He stole my movie. Yeah. He stole I Know That Voice. Kevin was in I Know That Voice. He stole the movie. He's one of the top guys. He can do anything. He can really do anything.
Really talented.
He's great in Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And secondly, I had a question for both of you. Other than Adriana Romano, of course, what is your favorite voiceover actor or director to work with?
Wes Gleason, I guess.
Wes Gleason's great.
He's great.
Lisa Schaefer is fantastic. Jack Fletcher is really wonderful. Ken Osborne.
I'm blanking on.
Yeah, Ken Osborne was a showrunner for Adventure Time, and he actually really helped me. Getting back to that question before, he really helped me, get into Jake a little more.
But Andrea's unique.
She loves actors. Yeah.
Not that the others don't, but she really loves actors, and she always has your back. And she knows how to put things in terms that an actor understands.
Yeah.
So it's just, she's very unique. She's in a class of her own.
Yeah.
All right,
thank you.
Sure.
All right, over here to the left again.
So I have two questions.
Yes, sir.
My first question is, what do you think of Troy Baker's Joker impression in the Batman games?
I think Troy's a friend of mine. Troy's great. I think Troy's Joker, what's interesting is Troy's Joker is similar, I think it's great. I think his is awesome. And just like we said before, there's an actor for every part, for everything. You know, it doesn't have to remain the same. And his take on it was similar to Mark's, but that's what they wanted. And Mark didn't want to do it. And Troy got Mark's blessing. So,
yeah.
So I love him. I love that guy. I think he's great. And what's your second question?
My second question is, what are your favorite Marvel movies?
Marvel.
It's adorable. It's very cute.
Are there Marvel movies?
Deadpool.
Yeah, Deadpool's good.
You can't see Deadpool yet. Give it about 10 years. You'll love it. It's really great. In fact, how old are you? You're 11? Somebody get this kid in a Deadpool, for crying out loud. He's all right. He's old enough. You're old enough. My mother took 9 10-year-olds to see Animal House for my birthday. That kid's old enough to see Deadpool. All I know is when I was 10 and I saw that, thank you, God. I was like, yes! The older folks will understand what I'm talking about. They know. They know.
All right, we're going to come back to the rights over here.
Yeah, this question is for both of you as well. I was just wondering, since your roles are so, like, big parts of your life, do you collect any of, like, your own memorabilia or have anything from, like, what you've done as, like, a kind of memento?
Oh, yeah.
How much? Wait, you got to tell the story about how you lost your TSA pre. No. Speaking of gifts and things that we get, like collectibles.
People bring gifts to the table sometimes they've done, right? So in Chicago, a fan brought a batarang that he had made in his metal shop out of real, like, wrought iron with a beautifully carved blade. And it was about this long, and it was the Batman symbol, and it was shining silver. And at the end of the Comic-Con, I had an assistant at my table, and I had to go straight to the Chicago airport. So I'm going to the airport, and I'm putting all my stuff together, and I didn't realize this, but my assistant takes the batarang and puts it in my money bag, my money pouch. And I take the money pouch, and I put it in with my suitcase, and I'm going through TSA, and they go, wait a minute. I'm like, what's the problem? She says, there's something in there. And I'm looking at the x-ray, and I see this outline of the batarang. And they said, oh, let me get it. I said, no, you stand back there. I have to get it. So they're running through it again. She can't find it. Then she's taking all my bags apart, and she's taking everything out. All my underwear's on the belt. All my socks are on the belt. And I can't find it. I know there's something in here. Then she opens up, and she goes, oh, here it is, with all this cash. Why do you have all this cash? I said, no, that's a batarang. I'm Batman.
Sir, can you get against the wall, please?
That's what they said. They said, stand over there. The police are coming. The Chicago police arrived. I said, I'm Batman. She said, sure you are. That's what they all say.
Oh, man.
So they were like wiping down my hands for coke. They thought I was a drug mule.
That, but then were you just like, can I just whip out imdb.com on my phone, please? I'll show you.
Can I prove to you?
Here are my credits.
I haven't shown you. Someone sent me a picture at Chicago Airport. Now there's a sign up, what is not allowed on planes, and it's a photo of the batarang.
Oh, my God!
Of my batarang.
That's awesome. And you know,
awesome?
And you know somebody at TSA was like, hey, man, this is a batarang. I'm going to take this home. This is for real. Hey, Kevin Conroy, I know who he is. I was just at that convention. Hey, all right, man. This is cool.
Oh,
my God.
You don't understand. I'm Batman. Sure you are.
But we get stuff all the time. Like, I mean, I've got I don't know how many wind-up benders, the gender bender. I'm a real toughie, you know. I have a bender that's about that tall from the stage to here. And there were only about 10 of them made. So I'm lucky I got one of them.
Wow.
But yeah, there's also, I mean, like,
all kinds of stuff. Especially
time.
The Batman,
oh, God,
world,
Batman,
the artwork.
Just...
Because when we do shows, you by contract have to do advertising for the shows. And when he started doing this in 91, they said, would you go do this comic book convention in San Diego? I'd never even heard of these things. We want to promote the show. So I drive down to San Diego, and they said, oh, we're not going to pay you, by the way, because, you know, you got to do the advertisings for free. So I went down, and I did it. And then they started sending me to the opening of these Warner Brothers stores. Remember the Warner Brothers stores? And they said, to promote the show. So they had galleries on the top floors of those stores, and they would sell cells. And I would go, and they'd have like a cocktail thing, and I'd be promoting the show, and they'd be selling all these cells that they then have me sign. And one of the store managers bragged at the end of one of these things, says, well, we just made $50,000 tonight. And I said, wait a minute. I'm doing this for free. You made $50,000. So the next time Warner Brothers asked me to go to one of these stores, I said, come on, you got to come. I said, no, you're contractually obligated. This is part of your contract. I said, you got to give me something. Give me something that doesn't cost you anything. I said, how about a cell? They said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll give you a cell.
How many cells do
I
you
said,
have?
How about two cells? So they started giving me two cells in appearance.
Oh, how many cells do you
I've
have?
I've got about 70. And
that's awesome.
Then they started letting me. They started like liking me over time. They let me go in the vault. There's a vault at Warner Brothers where they hold back the like heirloom cells. So I've got like,
oh man,
I've got
you got the stuff.
Carrot Blanca,
oh, wow,
from Looney Tunes.
Oh wow.
I've got Hanna-Barbera, signed Hanna-Barbera.
Oh my God.
Jetsons, Flintstones. I mean, it's cool stuff.
Wow.
See, they could have just given me a couple hundred bucks for it. I would have been happy with it.
That's it. That's all.
All right, another one here on the right.
So your guys' roles are, this is a question for both Kevin and John. Your guys' roles are absolutely iconic, but if you could go back and change one thing about any of your roles, what would you change?
Wow.
I would, you know what's funny? I came this close to playing Batman.
You did not.
I did. In Batman Brave and the Bold.
Oh, really? The one that Diedrich?
The one that Diedrich played, Diedrich? Batman. It was between me and Diedrich for the role of Batman. Diedrich got it. Andrea Romano was also the director. And she was like, well, you didn't get Batman, but it, as a consolation prize, you're getting to be Aquaman. And that turned out to be the better role, I think, kind of, for that show. So I would have loved to have gotten a shot to play Batman. But it's okay, because I could do an impression of Diedrich Bader. Which I would do in the booth and scare him. He knew, he was just like, John, I've got a beer. I can't leave you alone in the booth. I need this job. But yeah, that would, but I don't have any kind of regrets or anything like that.
I don't either.
But I'm
the one thing I did like doing early on was there was a much broader distinction between Bruce Wayne and Batman early on. Bruce Wayne had a lot of sarcasm, a lot of humor. It was a much lighter sound. I used David Niven as kind of my image in my head.
Yeah.
Very sophisticated. And it was a great, you know, counterbalance to Batman. And Bruce Timm loved it, and Andrea loved it. But then when because that was the first 6 months before they painted anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the artwork came back, and they realized how dark the show was. It was so dark. They said, it's jarring. That voice is too jarring. So they had me re-record the early episodes just to tone it down. They still liked the distinction, but they wanted to tone down. And it made sense visually in the world they had, but I always liked that earlier take on Bruce Wayne. It was fun. Just as an actor, it's fun to do something a little quirkier, you know?
All right, right up here up front.
Okay, my question is for both, and it's the same question pretty much. For Kevin, is there an episode of the animated series that you particularly stand out or like? And same question for John, is there an episode that you particularly enjoy in Futurama?
I have a lot of episodes that I really loved because it was so beautifully done. One, I always loved any show that investigated the psychology of Batman, because that's what made the character so much fun for me to play. His drama of his youth, his dark psychology. And the episode Perchance to Dream, where he is drugged and he goes back into his childhood. I got to do the voice of Batman and Bruce Wayne, and then drugged Batman, and then Bruce Wayne as a 20-year-old, and then Thomas Wayne, the father. So I was doing five voices.
Oh, nice.
And they all had to be similar, related, but distinct. And I was playing scenes, you know, between young Batman and Thomas Wayne with the most interesting actor, myself.
That's it. I love that.
It was a lot of fun. It was a real challenge. For an actor, actors like to get challenged. They like to get, you know, difficult situations and figure ways out of them. And that was, I was really proud of that episode. I love that episode.
I think for Futurama, I don't know, particular episodes, my performance, I don't know. I really kind of enjoyed Amazon Women on the Moon. Because I got to work with Bea Arthur.
Oh, wow.
And because she played the Femputer. And Bender and the Femputer, they fooled around.
You got it on with Bea Arthur?
They did it. Yeah, I got it on with Bea Arthur.
Baby.
And we had to record together, like, fooling around noises. And so I'm, you know, I'm going, yeah. And she's going, And at one point, I actually said to B. Arthur, oh, yeah, baby, give me some of that. I got to say that to a golden girl, which was pretty, that's pretty awesome. That one was great. Bender should not be allowed on television, where I have the nice, you know, speech to the camera about, you know, really, you know, taking care of your kids and sitting them down and hitting them.
Yeah.
You know, but that one was great. That one was fun. As far as, like, you know, the show itself, I mean, you know, nobody wants to talk about Seymour, Jurassic Bark, but that was just an amazing, you know, 21 minutes of comedy and 1 minute of devastating tears. But yeah, I mean the Bender just, I don't know, I always liked it when he got emotional. And then, you know, then completely did a 180 and started laughing in someone's face. That was a lot of fun. The schizophrenia of his actions were always fun to play. So, I mean, that was kind of across the board. But those episodes stand out.
But you touched on something that's so interesting about, and so we're so lucky to work with so many actors from so many different generations.
Yeah.
Like B. Arthur.
Yeah, no,
and
I know.
And in Batman, in Justice League, the new Justice League, the one that's just started, Cloris Leachman came in, yeah, to do Granny Gulch.
Oh, man.
Cloris Leachman.
Yeah.
She's like a legend.
Frau Blücher.
Frau Blücher. I know.
You don't get any fruit cup. She was just so
funny.
She's
incredible.
No, she's amazing.
And Michael Ancera as Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
the people we get to work with, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. I mean,
yeah, that's,
he was such,
yeah,
a sweet guy.
That's a trip. That's a trip.
All right, time for one more. Where are we going? Right here?
I actually have a question for both of you guys. John, the first time I heard you, pretty sure like everybody else was in Futurama. But then we heard you go on and play Marcus Fenix in the Gears of War games. And my question was, like, how do you go from like happy, jolly characters and funny characters like Bender and Jake? Like, do you have to get into a certain mode to play someone like Fenix?
Prescription drugs. no, it's just this innate gift that we have as actors to be able to turn it on and turn it off. Or, you know, it all depends on what your switch, you know, how long your switch takes. But, you know, it's whatever the role asks for, and you just kind of do it. And you prepare, like, you know, both of those voices are, you know, they're physically straining, so you have to be ready to, you know, to breathe a lot and support your voice with your breath. And but, you know, I don't know, it's just one of those things that just comes naturally. And then when you see the script in front of you, when you see the folks that you're working with, you just kind of get right into it. You just kind of, you're ready, you know.
I think a lot of it has to do with being able to be childlike.
Yeah.
That's what acting is really a lot about. Because when little kids, before the world screws them up, are so emotional. You know, and they can go from A to Z to B to D. They're all over the room.
Yeah.
And then the world tells you, you know, calm down. You know, straighten up. And I think a room... And Andrea always compares us to children in the recording studio.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because we do behave like children.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the emotional range that you have to have.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. The facile quality of going from one to the other, the other, the other. I think it's childlike.
Absolutely. No, I think that's really something that you just hit. Because that...
You're like a big kid.
Yeah, I know.
You
I know.
Are known
no, totally.
For being a
yeah,
big kid.
Absolutely. It's it, but it's but the
and that's
the
a good thing.
No, it is. As an actor, that's actually a really good thing because there are less things holding you back. You know.
Yeah.
When you're the less bias you have towards doing something, you know, with emotion, the better off you're able to get there. The road is clearer. you know?
The more dangerous it feels, the better it is.
Yeah. The more you're on a tightrope. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, the second part, did you have a second part?
I was curious how fun was it to be in a recording booth with Mark Hamill and bounce lines off each other?
It's a dangerous place to be.
Why do you think he got a batarang from
with a razor blade
edge? Yeah, that's it. He's ready.
No, he physicalizes. I haven't done Joker with you. You probably do the same thing. But Mark really physicalizes Joker. He's like, you know that Jim Carrey kind of rubbery face thing? That's Mark in the booth. He's like, woo, batty.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, you're like, whoa. Yeah. You know, just stay over there. Yeah. And then the spit's flying.
Yeah.
But he's the wonderful thing about Mark is I sense when he's watching me, I sense such love in his eyes. I sense that he loves when I'm good. And I know he feels it from me when I'm watching him. There's a generosity with certain actors are people. There's generous ones, selfish ones, kind ones, mean ones, you know, just like people. Generous actors are the most wonderful people in the world because they really love to watch another actor perform. And also because you know that person's going to give you so much more to react to.
There's inspiration there.
And Mark is just one of those people. It's a continuous circuit of energy. You know what I mean? So the ego doesn't get in the way. A lot of actors, the ego gets in the way.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally. I mean, case in point, like I was saying before, Mark came up to me and went, you know,
and he loved
oh my God, John, I love your Joker. It's a great take, great job. Like, and for someone who has done a role for that long, to be kind enough to come and give you a compliment on your work, like that's above and beyond the call. He didn't have to say shit to me. He didn't have to say a word, and yet he reached out, like stop me. You know, that kind of generosity. You know, and you learn from that. It inspires you.
Yeah.
Like they're doing a live action Kim Possible, and my buddy Todd Stashwick is playing Dr. Draken. And, like, he called me up, and I was like, dude, I heard, bro. Congratulations. This is great, man. You're going to rock this. And he was on the other end of the line going, oh, man, this is the blessing that I didn't know I really needed, but I'm getting it, you know? Like, when you're able to do that for someone, it just, you pass it along. You know, there's something important about that. And he's great. Mark is great. Mark is awesome.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, John, it's been amazing. I'm sure you all have many other questions, but you're going to have to get them over at the booth. They are down on the lower level with everybody else.
Is there an Orange Julius here? That's all I need to know. Is there an Orange Julius? There is?
Okay.
I'm fucking, oh my God, I'm all over it.
One more round of applause for our one.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. You all have a great time.